This is Live in the Studio with G2. The show where we talk about the music we love to listen to and play. From time to time, we will have friends pop in and tell us their story, inspired by their musical journey and experience. Relax, enjoy, and subscribe.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Here we are for the next episode of Live from the Studio.
Hello. Hi.
How's everybody doing this go-around this week?
We ask them that like they can respond.
Yeah, really. I'm going to get these sounds right here. So this week, we chose to talk about, I guess it's a group that I consider a favorite from way, way back, Hall & Oates, Daryl Hall and John Oates.
Yeah, no.
Have you ever heard of that group?
Have I? If you haven't heard of Hall & Oates, then you're seriously been living under a rock. I mean, they're one of the greatest duos.
Oh, they changed everything.
Of all time. Yeah. I think actually as far as hits go, they have the most hits of any pop duo or R&B duo of all time.
That's very possible. That
I
is.
I think that's right. What they're, they got some kind of
recognition.
Award, recognition of some kind, but it's they're just geniuses together.
The influence that they had early on is what's really interesting to me. And, you know, the way they come from, of course, they come from Philly, mm-hmm. and the influences of music in Philly at that time is what kind of created their sound. Now a lot of people, I don't know if you know this, but a lot of people, when they think of Hall & Oates, they think of a duo. And Hall & Oates isn't really, they don't consider themselves a duo. They're two individual artists with somewhat unique sounds that choose to play together as a, I guess, as you will, a band. And that's why you see a lot of the songs, if you look at who wrote what, they write individually and then sometimes collaborate.
Yes. The separation that they have, and then, you know, of them doing their own little thing, because Daryl Hall does his own thing and John Oates does his own thing, and
yeah.
They sound different. Little similarities, but mostly it's different from each other. But when they get back together, it's like it's a groove they get into.
Yeah, and that's funny. When they get back together, a lot of people thought for the longest time that they broke up, and they really have never broken up. They've gone off. They've taken breaks. They've done side projects, mm-hmm. But they're still a group as they were in the very beginning.
And there's a lot of groups out there that were really successful all at once or had a good string of successful number one hits that a lot of people think that they've broken up, and they haven't. They just took a break.
Right,
you
right.
Know, another one that comes to mind, which we may do a show on later on, would be Hootie and the Blowfish.
This is the first time I've heard of this.
Well, Hootie and the Blowfish, which is a big...
Yeah,
I love them. But a lot of people thought they broke up, but they never actually broke up.
No, I guess they just kind of went and did their thing.
And they still show up and do shows.
Yep.
They actually had a show recently, I want to say, in Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a show. But they do a regular yearly thing in Carolina. And where is he from? He's from North Carolina, isn't he?
I think so.
He's from Charlotte.
I'm not sure. We'll look that up
something
before.
Something like that.
Before we do the episode on Hootie.
Yeah, we'll get all the facts straight. But the fact is that there's a lot of these duos, especially, you know, Hall & Oates, that then break up. They're still together. They just do things. They have their own projects. They get bored with one another, and then they come back when they're not bored anymore.
Exactly.
But I did find out information about Hall & Oates was that they have sold an estimated, and I believe this is of 2017. So
okay,
last
it's close
year,
enough.
But they've sold an estimated 40 million records.
Wow.
Making them the best-selling music duo in history.
Wow. Yeah. That's a lot.
That's
quite a lot.
That's
and you know,
that's high up there. That's
Daryl Hall is not a fan of the music business.
No, he's not.
He's not at all.
A lot of interviews, and I even think when he introduced some other, or even when he, I think they accepted for something for the Rock and Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
he kind of had a little snide comment.
I saw that.
Really?
He's like,
It's like, okay, you know, that's cool, dude.
I think he says, by design, the music business is made up on the principles of thievery or something.
I think that is what he said.
I've heard him say from time to time that the artist actually gets very little in the music industry. The artist is usually what gets the scraps. And everybody involved in the process gets something else. And that's why you see independent labels coming up more and more. Because you can, not so much the money part of it, but you can control the artistic part of it, and which is what every musician wants to be able to do, is control their own.
Well, the technology
style
now is more readily available for everyone to,
yes,
to be able to, maybe not so much in the mastering process.
And we talked about that in the last episode.
But as far as recording, writing songs, that whole, and actually distributing, a lot of that can be done on your own.
And
a lot of people do that. There's a lot of artists that do that. And I kind of feel like, you know, you hear about the way that the music industry was, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s. You know,
right.
Where,
right about the time when they were coming up.
Yeah, you know, where you could, anybody could record, you know, something and then just, you know, like for a dime or something, you know, you could record some kind of thing, little one song, little record, and then you could
like
just
a drugstore recording,
and then you'd play at these places, and all of a sudden you see these acts or these artists get up and get famous, you know, real quick and get found. Of course, there's not a lot of people finding others now, but the process of recording something your own and distributing it on the street or something like that, it's kind of going back to that in a way.
It started out that way, where you're indie, what we call indie labels now, were just, you know, a guy who had a furniture store, and on the side he would record bands
or knew
in the local
area. Or knew a guy that used to record church choirs.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, I'll give you a couple bucks.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just record my band.
And, but it was all about distribution.
Yeah.
And what they did then was, and even now, I mean, Daryl Hall will say, you didn't make the money off of the record as much as you made it off of concerts,
and
out of playing live.
Yeah.
And so he considers Hall and Oates to be a live band still today.
Yeah.
And it's true even today. You know, it went through independent record labels, and then it got up to the big name record labels, and now it's back down to the independent, which is great. The, like you said, the days of somebody finding somebody is very slim.
We had a brief resurgence of that with YouTube, where, you know, people,
well, YouTube is the way
and
now.
And it's still doing it, but it's not. I really feel like it's going back to the more places you play.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Even then, the find the venues now is harder.
Well,
I think
that's why you see more of YouTube stuff. That's why you see more of what we are doing here. There's a lot of bands that do this, because the technology, like you said, the technology is available to be able to do this in your own home studio, and then the distribution source, which is YouTube and the social medias, are there.
Mm-hmm. You know, the way Daryl Hall put that was so just simplistic with it, about performing and whatnot, because I feel like there's two schools of thought with someone that records music or writes music or plays it. There's people that like to get into the studio record and keep recording and then kind of mix it down and everything, and there's others that they hate that and they just want to perform. I personally don't like recording. I don't like that process. It's necessary to a certain extent, but I hate it, because it's to me, it's not that fun, because you record a little thing and then you have to sit there and listen to it and say, I don't know if I really like that.
I could do that better.
And then you do it again and then again and again, and all of a sudden you're down to like 10 takes and you're like, what were we doing?
You still don't feel like you've gotten it. I know. I would rather get out, play, and in front of a crowd of people, and whatever happens, happens, you know, and you get that. And that's how you learn. You know, when we record here, like we said before, we record as if we're playing live somewhere, and happens, happens. You know, what we capture?
There's little parts that we could tweak, but you know, we've already recorded, so we can't.
But
the moment has passed.
The moment has passed.
But no, it's just, it's more simple to me in a positive way to just
I like the organicness.
Yeah, rather than, you know, sit in the studio all day and just, you know, record crap.
Track after track, and then have some engineer put it together for
you. No, I don't think that's really, I think you could do that better. And it's like, I'm over it. Yeah. I'm over that. I mean, I like recording for this purpose and getting out there and having a live performance somewhere and posting it online so people can, you know, kind of see what we do. But
I like the playing in front of people. I don't care how many people it is or how little people. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter.
I like doing it.
But, you know, that's why the way that we set up to where we're recording something, but we're still kind of playing it live. We're not,
right.
I'm playing a guitar part, recording that, and then playing and then singing vocals and recording that, then harmonies. Everything is on the spot, and that's why I like it, because that is the truest way to record if you like performing.
Yeah, what you were referring to, that playing an instrument and then going back and playing, they consider that tracking.
Yeah.
And I'm you know, I get bored.
I don't know all
the
lingos.
Bored. I don't know the
nomenclature. I don't know all the lingos.
It gets tiring. I mean, it's like he said, it's necessary. If you're doing it for a label, they want the best product out there, and you know, they're not going to play around, and so they're spending a lot of money on you. But if you're doing it independently, you have the luxury of making mistakes, which is good to the process, and re-recording it. And if it's not something you're happy with, come back and do it again. You have the luxury of that, and I that's what I like about the re-emergence of the independent artist and the independent record label. What we lack is distribution, and
it's getting better and better.
Yeah, but our goal is not getting records in front of as many people as we can. Our goal is playing in front of as many people as we can.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we record something and put it on YouTube or on social media of some kind, and you get an audience there, and then you go play somewhere, and then your audience follows you. That's what a musician really wants.
We should have an episode, you know, later on. We have a whole bunch of ideas of episodes, and if you guys ever see something that you want us to do or talk about or something, please message us or you know, comment and whatnot. But we are always thinking of different episodes, and I think a good episode would be the type of venues that are suited to the type of music that you want to play. Because there's truth to getting out to as many people as possible. That's true. But it's also about the right gig.
Oh, yeah, you got to put yourself on the right stage.
Yeah, you have to put yourself in the right audience too, because you know if you play reggae music, you know they're probably not going to like you
in a country bar
or a barbecue joint. Like
good old Blues Brothers boys.
Good old Blues Brothers boys.
You know, no, it's true.
It's just that you have to find your audience. When you're searching for your voice, your music, and the style that you love to play, or it just comes out naturally, when you decide that, you also need to think about the audience that is going to appreciate that. Because as much as we want everyone to appreciate our music, most won't.
That's right.
So you got to find that group of people,
and that's okay.
Appeal to that group of people, because that group of people are the ones that are listening and the ones that want to see you play.
And speaking of playing,
mm-hmm.
why don't we do a song?
Yeah, sorry, I get off track.
it's called off tracking.
Off tracking. Oh, okay.
All right,
let's not say that again.
Let's do a Hall & Oates song.
Yeah.
Let's do.
Why not?
We're gonna do Maneater.
Maneater, yeah. Oh,
which was a big hit for them.
It was, and it wasn't. They didn't think it was going to be. They were unsure, and actually,
Few times though. Do you think this is going to be a hit?
No, yeah. And the thing about Maneater that was kind of interesting was that, of course, you know, John Oates wrote a lot of the music for Hall & Oates, and he originally wrote it as a reggae.
Yeah.
Song as a style, you know, like that island feel.
Yeah, not reggae per se.
No,
not
but the rhythm,
Bob
the groove,
Marley, but
the groove of it, you know, where it's like dun, 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 dun,
yeah, yeah,
you know, all that that type of rhythm. But the I think the producer or the co-writer said, I don't know, let's do something a little bit and then a little bit more into the Motown. Like
I think that was Daryl.
It might have been Daryl that kind of was okay with that. I don't think he brought it up.
Really? Okay.
I think it was the producer, but he was like, yeah, let's do that. So he kind of came up with the with
dun 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 dun. Yeah,
yeah, that keyboard part that's so, you know, known for that song.
Yeah,
but we actually did it a little bit more into a reggae style.
We do it a little more like I don't know if it's the original.
I don't know. At this point, it's kind of up the hearsay, but. It had a good groove to it, so we just kind of went with it. So
yeah. So here and again, remember, every time we play it, it's a little different. We're surprised as well. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here's Maneater as done by G2.
Enjoy.
I'm comes. Oh, oh, here she comes.
Right, so there we go.
Yeah,
I'm pleased with it.
I like it. I you know, it's there. I've noticed little things that I'd like to redo. But again,
yeah.
That's all about a live performance.
That's a live.
It's done.
Yeah,
it's done. You can't go back
now. it's done.
It's done.
Now, here's something interesting about Maneater. A lot of people think that's about a girl, and it's not.
No,
the Maneater is New York City. And now it has been influenced by a girl.
Yes.
But the Maneater is the city. You know, she'll rip your world apart. The she is the city of New York. So that's kind of interesting. I always like to, you know, when you hear a song, you go, wonder what they were thinking. What is that supposed to be? What was that about? This is interesting to me that it's about the New York City atmosphere. And a lot of artists have sung about the New York City life.
No, it's a very big inspiration for a lot of artists, especially ones coming out of the 80s, because the 80s had a huge, just, that was the center of the music industry in that time, in the 80s. And then in the 90s, it went more towards the West Coast, near Seattle.
Right.
And, you know, so it has little different pockets. But I was just looking that up, and, yeah, it's where it says, I was checking it.
I was ahead of you, see? Because
I didn't want you to say something that was wrong.
See, I don't have to look up the notes.
You know,
I live them.
Well,
yeah,
I don't have that luxury.
A lot of people sing about New York City, almost as many people sing about New York City as they do about Perry, Georgia.
I don't think that's true.
Nah, that's I make that up.
It said it's about greed, spoiled riches.
Yep.
So,
and there's another Hall & Oates song. What is the now I'm drawing a blank. It also, you also think it's about a girl, but it's actually,
I can't go for that.
Nope. No.
You sure?
Yeah.
Oh, Rich Girl.
Rich Girl. It's not about a girl.
Gone too fine, you know it don't matter anyway.
It's about a boy.
Yeah.
It's actually it was about a friend of Daryl Hall's boyfriend, who was not a bad guy, but he was a what they called a trust fund person. He lived off of a trust fund. He didn't have to work. And he wrote about them. But, you know, you're a rich guy doesn't sound as exciting as you're a rich girl. So there is that.
Well, they'd say with that, it kind of goes back to the Maneater song, is that even though it's about, you know, let's say a different gender than what sells, or in writing it in the point of view of a girl instead of writing it in the point of view of a city, it just it sounds better.
Yeah, yeah.
And rhythmically, that's what Daryl Hall has said. It's just it, you know, it's in the setting of a girl because it makes more sense to the listener. But in reality, it was about the city of New York.
I always, and you've heard me tell you this a lot, when you're singing a song. Or even writing. Let's use writing as an example. You're writing a song. You're thinking about something. You're putting the story together in your head about what you're writing about, what your song is about. But the listener may not have that same story in their head. So it's about creating that movie. So what are they going to see in their head when they listen to your song? It could be completely different. So, and that's okay. That's the way it should be. It's about creating experiences.
Well, there's some artists that when they record a song, and people always ask, oh, what you meant by that? You know, what was that line? They usually say,
what does it mean to you?
Exactly. Because to a certain extent, I believe the inspiration for the artist when they write is a little bit irrelevant when it comes to the listener. Because the whole point is to write, is get inspired enough to write a good song and have someone enjoy it.
Yeah.
But you want them to enjoy it. And the best way to enjoy something is to relate it to your own life. So if the listener is saying, oh, well, this is what it means to me, then that's great.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah. Where it gets a little dicey is when they start saying, oh, no, what he really meant was this. And it's like, well, I don't really want to say what I meant, but that's not what it is.
Do we really care?
No.
I don't.
I don't.
So,
good song's a good song.
You know, just on a side note, I've noticed we've gotten some additional subscribers. Thank you very much. Appreciate
that. Yeah, thank
you.
Yeah, that's nice. What is it, like two?
I think we're up to two. Keep subscribing. Keep listening.
Keep sharing, subscribing, liking, comment. Please let us know what you think. If you have an idea for an episode or anything like
that
would be great.
Yeah, we're looking forward to those.
Questions or anything, you know?
Yeah, you want to know more about us? You want to know more about our process, how we do what we do? If you want to know where we're playing next, shoot us a note. We'll get you informed, and we want to see you out there, though. We're not going to give you this information and not want something in return.
It's a quid pro quo.
We want to see you out there.
Yeah.
So thank you for tuning in. Mm-hmm. Hope you enjoyed this episode. We're going to come back with another one next week.
Yeah, sounds good.
I'm not sure what the topic is going to be, but stay tuned. It'll be something fun. I can guarantee that. Thanks again, Gary, for showing up.
Yeah.
I know it was difficult for you to get here with the traffic in the hallway and all.
No idea.
And ladies and gentlemen, we will see you next time on Live from the Studio with G2.